Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Porto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Porto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. It is day 11 of our Iditarod coverage and also our regular time slot for Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.5 FM in Palmer, Alaska. You can stream us live at radiofreepalmer.org or pick up the podcast on mushingradio.com. And for a lot of guys, it is not over in terms of Iditarod. There's still 36 mushers out on the trail. Paul Gephardt just came in a few minutes ago. So we're going to talk about the folks that already came into Nome today, then, of course, the remaining mushers that are still out there. But before we do that, I want to welcome our co-host calling in from California, Alex Stein. Alex, how's it going?
It's going great, Robert. How are you up there?
Very good. Thank you. It's a very nice day up here in Alaska. We got some snow melt going on. It looks like spring is upon us. I'm looking forward to doing some dog yard work and getting out there and planning for next year. What's going on down there in California? And, you know, we haven't talked about that, but, you know, there's mushing fans all over the world, California included. How do you guys get your mushing fix down there if you're not watching the Internet?
Of course, there's a lot of watching the Internet, but there are a lot of people. We do have mountains in California, so we do have snow part of the year. And then a lot of other people who are into running dogs will run dogs on the back of quads or other sort of dry land devices so that they can get their dog running fix.
So, we're still talking about the Iditarod, and I want to get to the finishers here in just a second. But before we do, let's stir up just a little bit of controversy, if we can. It's my understanding that last night, shortly after Dallas Seavey came in and won the Iditarod, that the commentary stopped on Iditarod Insider and Iditarod Live and all that. Do you know anything about that? I guess they had the video feed up, but there was nothing going on in terms of commentary.
Yeah, you know, they had some of the Iditarod Insider has coverage of the end of the race, the first musher coming in. So they had a lot of people kind of regurgitating a lot of facts that many fans already know about Dallas and going over some of that. When he came in, they pretty much turned it over to live coverage of Dallas being interviewed and thanking his sponsors and posing with his lead dogs. And so, yeah, there was not a lot of what we would really call commentary after that. And then the insider has video of all, or will have video of all of the finishers when they come in, but they cut away from their live feed of Dallas fairly quickly after that.
And I know there's a great picture of Dallas running out to congratulate Ali Zirkle, who came in just about an hour, a little bit less than an hour, like within seconds of an hour behind Dallas. And I guess he jumped away from an interview, ran out to Front Street, and gave her a very warm welcome. Did you see that video, or can you comment on that?
Yeah, I saw that video, and I believe we have the picture posted up on our Facebook page at Dogworks Radio. I have to say that is one of my favorite pictures of this year's Iditarod. It really shows two very tough competitors who really slugged it out for almost all the way into Nome. But at the end of the day, these are two people who I think have a tremendous amount of respect and affection for each other. And as we've talked about a few times, that really is what a lot of this is about. You can race hard against each other. It's a very competitive sport, especially at the highest levels. But at the end of the day, there's a certain amount of we're all in this together spirit, and that is one of the more wonderful things about about dog mushing and about the Iditarod in particular.
So let's talk about who's come in so far into Nome, then the next group that will be following there shortly after. In first place, Dallas Seavey. Second, Ali Zirkel. Third, Ramey Smith. Fourth, Aaron Burmeister. Fifth, Peter Kaiser. Sixth, Ray Reddington Jr. Seventh, Mitch Seavey. Eighth, Michael Williams Jr. Ninth, 2011 winner John Baker. 10th, Didi Genro, great finish by Didi. 11th, Sigrid Erkan, I believe you pronounce it. 12th, mm-hmm. Ken Anderson. 13th, Rookie of the Year, excellent race, Brent Sass. 14th, Old School Musher, Sonny Linder, and Paul Gephardt in 15th place. And the next couple that are coming in will be Hugh Neff, good friend of mine, and Michelle Phillips, who are currently out of safety or just now leaving. And then following those guys, rounding out the top 20 there, Roan Booser and his dad Martin, Gerald Sousa, and Colleen Robertia, I believe is how you pronounce it. And then we can't forget about Lance Mackey in 22nd place. What can you tell us about the guys and gals that are just getting ready to come into Nome? Hugh Neff, Michelle Phillips, followed by the Boosers.
Well, Hugh and Michelle have pretty much been running together all the way out of White Mountain. They left not too far apart, and they've been pretty much neck and neck on the entire trail. I expect that once they get out of safety, they will both sprint for the finish. And you know, and the Boozers also have been running together since they left White Mountain. I've got to say, one of the things that strikes me is we've talked about this or touched on it a couple of times. We've had some very, very strong races by a lot of the female mushers this year, and it looks like if the standings hold the way they are now, we are going to have, I believe, 9 female teams in the top 30.
That's awesome. You know, when something like that happens, that we've talked about changing of the guard and, you know, old school versus new school. But when we have that many women mushers, that's really telling something about this sport. And we've talked a lot about it on this show, about it being an equal playing field and there is no special treatment or anything. These gals are hardy mushers. They know exactly what is out there and what is expected of them as mushers. And they're putting the pedal to the metal and getting it done, aren't they?
Absolutely. And another thing, you know, we may have skipped over this a little bit in the coverage last night, but Ali Zirkel ran an amazing, amazing race. And in pretty much any other year, she would have been the champion. It's just that she wasn't quite fast enough to be able to beat Dallas Seavey. And part of the reason for that is that Dallas just had a pretty astonishing, amazing race where a lot of things broke in his direction, and he had a very strong strategy that he stuck with all the way through. And in the end, his dogs and the way he implemented his strategy was too much for anyone to be able to overcome. Having said that, Ali Zirkel ran a spectacular race, and there is so much to be proud of for her team and her supporters. And just in case we didn't give her enough credit last night, I just want to go out of the way to give her a little bit more tonight.
So with these guys coming in, as I said, 37, I believe, mushers still out there on the trail, do you see any surprises in some of the front runners or the big-name mushers that struggled a little bit? I know it was very big news last year when Lance Mackey and Martin Boosser, and I believe it was it Rick Swenson that had the hand injury? Those were the big stories of the Iditarod last year, with some of the big names having problems or issues along the trail. Have you seen anybody that's really faltered this year in terms of stories like last year?
Yeah, last year with the hand injury, that was Mitch Seavey. Obviously, Jeff King scratching outside of Unalakleet was probably the biggest story along those lines, and also just Lance Mackey having so many problems with his team. And he's now in White Mountain with 9 dogs. Looks like he'll finish definitely in the top 25, possibly in the top 20. He's currently in 22nd place. But he's had really a tough year as well and has struggled a lot. And we talked a little bit on an earlier episode about his lead dog, Larry, and how he hasn't quite been able to put together a team that's been as good without Larry. And, there have been some really amazing performances that I think have surprised some of us. Certainly Ramey Smith coming out of being in 30th place and then finishing third is really an astonishingly great story of this year's Iditarod. I just wanted to mention briefly when Didi Genro came in this morning, and she came in very early this morning at a little before 6 o'clock, she said when she was interviewed at the finish that one of the things that made her most proud of being part of the Iditarod this year is watching younger racers like Dallas Seavey and Michael Williams Jr. and Pete Kaiser. And she mentioned that she's known all of these racers pretty much all their lives, and she's known their parents, and that she feels that this is a really good sign that the future of dog racing is in good hands.
And that's awesome. I know we've talked a lot about this year on our coverage, and when you have guys like that, like Brent Sass and Dallas Seavey and Peter Kaiser and all those guys, and of course many of them that are coming up, Roan Booser and all of those guys that are still on their way, Braxton Peterson and all those guys that are still coming in, it is a good thing for mushing. It's still very vibrant. It's not, you know, the old guys school where only the older folks in terms of mushing history can still take part. So I think it is very, very vibrant, and we have a lot to look forward to in the coming years. So today, I know we've teased about this a little bit to talk about what's coming up. It really doesn't concern a lot of the mushers now, but you talked about the interference rule a couple of days ago. Do you care to talk about that for a minute or two? Then I want to get into talking a little bit about Justin Savage. And then tonight we're going to talk about our featured musher, Jan Steves. What can you tell us about that interference rule that you mentioned a couple of days ago?
Yeah, absolutely. The rule itself is Rule 31, and it says you're not allowed to have any planned help in the race. So you cannot be assisted by anyone else. And what that means, practically speaking, is that mushers have to do everything to take care of and feed their dogs while they are on the trail. So when a musher gets into a checkpoint, it's not considered outside assistance if there is something that is available to all of the mushers, such as hot water or straw. But no one is allowed to help the mushers feed the dogs. No one is allowed to help the mushers booty the dogs or put blankets on the dogs. These are all tasks that the musher has to do him or herself. And I think that's something that casual fans might not be that aware of, because a lot of the coverage we see is of the ceremonial start in Anchorage or the restart in Willow when there are a lot of people around, and it seems like there are a lot of people helping each musher do these various tasks. But once the race starts and once you're out of the gate at Willow, the musher really is responsible for doing everything for those 16 dogs until you get to Nome or until you scratch.
And that's a great point. And think about doing that in minus 30 degree weather with 35 mile an hour winds and 6, 7, 8 days without sleep. And you will know exactly what I'm talking about. And just a good story to preface that with. We got a dog in just last night from Hugh Neff, a good friend of mine, and he dropped a dog named Goldie. And she still had on one of her dog coats. And I haven't talked with Hugh, but her coat was the straps on her coat were all over the place. They were, you know, the top strap that goes around the neck was attached to the back strap and attached with duct tape and all that sort of stuff. And then I looked at it, I took it apart and examined the Velcro and all that, and I thought, wow, there's nothing wrong with this coat. I wonder why he put Velcro on it. And the only thing I can think of is he was just so exhausted, so tired, so worn out from being out there in the trail, possibly in the middle of the night, that he just thought, wow, this isn't working, so I got to assist this by putting on some duct tape.
Exactly. And, you know, sometimes you look at a musher will come into a checkpoint and will be in the checkpoint for 3 or 4 hours. And I think sometimes the tendency is to think, oh, well, they got into the checkpoint and they could get 3 or 4 hours of sleep. When in fact, you get into the checkpoint, you have to take care of the dogs, you have to feed the dogs, you have to bed the dogs down if the dogs are going, if you're going to be there for a few hours so that the dogs can sleep. Then you go in into the checkpoint, you are maybe getting something to eat, maybe grabbing a little bit of sleep, and then you have to go out before you leave, before you check out, and you have to prepare the dogs for going back on the trail. And when you have a dog team of 16 dogs, or even late in the race where a lot of teams will have 9 or 10 dogs, that is something that, that can take time and energy and concentration. And as you said, when you're out there and it's 20 or 30 below zero, or you've slept, you know, 3 or 4 hours in the past 2 days, that can be a very challenging thing to do and to do efficiently.
And just to give a musher's perspective on that, it takes approximately a half hour to 45 minutes on both sides of that checkpoint. So when you're coming in and unbooting the dogs and unharnessing them and you know, laying down the straw and setting up the food and all that, that takes about 45 minutes. And then, of course, you have to do that all over again before you get started. So if you're there at a checkpoint for 3 to 4 hours, a good 2 hours of that, hour and a half to 2 hours, is tending to the dogs before and after arriving at that checkpoint, or before, you know, stopping yourself, and then after the feeding and all that's done. So there is not a lot of rest, and that's why you see all of those pictures of people that just look utterly exhausted. And the only thing I can equate that to, I don't think there's another sporting event in the world where a person is expected to function and stay awake for 8, 9, 10 days at a time with very little rest. I know, you know, they have ultra marathons where folks are up for 2 or 3 days, but there is no other sporting event in the world where people are expected to do 8, 9, 10 days with very little sleep.
Yeah, absolutely. And the one thing also I wanted to mention about this rule is that there are a couple of notable exceptions to that. If a dog team is loose without the musher, then competitors are allowed to stop the dog team and secure it or tie it to a tree if it's somewhere where there are trees, or otherwise make sure that the dog team isn't just running off into the woods or whatever. In addition, if a musher is walking and has been separated from his or her team, other mushers are allowed to pick up that musher and let him ride with them. These things must be reported to the race officials at the next checkpoint. And there are some cases where there can be penalties for these things. A lot of that is at the discretion of the race officials and ultimately the race marshal.
So that brings up our story of today with Justin Savatas, a willow musher right in our backyard pretty much at my place. Bib 38, Justin Savatas. He was pretty much tolling around in the middle of the Bering Sea for several hours today, 5 miles away from the coast, it looked like on GPS, in the middle of nowhere, just going back and forth. And I watched that line there on the GPS go from one section to another, and there was so many worried folks out there saying, can somebody go out and get this guy? You know, they were worried sick about this guy, including his sister, who was very vocal on the Iditarod Trail Committee's Facebook page. What can you tell us about Justin?
It looks like, and I haven't heard since he got into Kayuk, but he is now safely into Kayuk. It looks like what probably happened is that he got significantly farther west than he should have been or than he would have wanted to be. There was severe, severe wind on the ice today. And it was so severe, in fact, that Hank DeBruin, it looks like he checked out of Shaktulik, went up to the ice, and then decided to come back and wait for a while back in Shaktulik. A lot of the mushers who were made crossings this afternoon had very, very slow times because there were 15 to 25 mile per hour headwinds. What is likely is that Justin got blown off course, and at one point it looked like he was perhaps 5 or 6 miles east of where he wanted to be and of where the trail was going over the ice. He was stopped for quite a bit of time, for maybe an hour or an hour and a half, and then when he started moving, it looks like he was able to get his bearings again and then go not straight east, but northeast towards the checkpoint, eventually got into the Kayuk Inlet, and then slowly made his way to the checkpoint. Teams yesterday been making this crossing in 8 to 9 hours, and Justin took nearly 14 from Shaktulik until he got into Kayuk.
Can you imagine being 5 miles in the middle of the ocean on sea ice? And a lot of people think it's just this perfect sheet of ice, but it's not. There's many places where it's very jumbled and cracked and looks like many icebergs out there in the middle of the ocean. So I can only imagine what Justin was going through. Just a recent rule in Iditarod is you're allowed to have a personal GPS. I don't know if Justin had one, but you're allowed to have those. But those are only good if you put in the waypoints of the checkpoints or whatever you're doing. But that also comes into play on whether he was under that rule that you talked about, Rule 31, if he had to have any outside assistance. It doesn't look like he did because he's still in the race, and I don't know if there's a penalty. There hasn't been any back and forth on that yet. So it'll be interesting to see how that turns out, but I can only imagine just how frightful that could be. And again, just a musher's perspective, often the dogs will follow the trail where other dogs have gone, but that's not always the case. If another team takes a wrong turn, your dog team that's following behind them may take that wrong turn as well, following that dog's scent on the trail. And it is not as well marked out there on the Bering Sea as it is over land, of course, with the trail markers and all that. So I can imagine he was, he's a very experienced musher, but I'm sure he had, you know, the fear of God, so to speak, in him this afternoon. So, Alex, so we have about...
Absolutely, and we've posted a couple of videos on our Facebook page that show Ali Zirkle going over this area in the ice in past years, and you can get a pretty clear idea of what it's like with, in those cases, I think it was a much more moderate wind. And Karen Ramstead, whom we talked about a couple nights ago, and Travis Cooper are currently making their way across the ice, and it looks like they are stopping frequently. And I don't know if that's to put new booties on their dogs or to rearrange the dogs or because there's a problem with their dogs, but they're making very slow but steady progress over the ice, and just I think it's just the case that there is a tremendous amount of wind and conditions are not very good right now.
You know, I don't know the answer to this, but do you have any idea how many miles it is over the sea ice between those two checkpoints there?
I believe it is somewhere on the order of 30 or 35 miles.
So at 8 miles an hour, that's about four or five hours, give or take, on that ice. Man, that's going to make a musher out there, if I can say so myself. So, Alex, we have about 5 or 6 minutes left. I know we want to talk about our featured musher this evening. It's Jan Steves. She's pulling up the back of the pack with her friend Bob Klupach. Bob has been a veteran of Iditarods for many years, and he decided that he was going to get back into it this year, and it looks like he and Jan are running it together. I've ran with Jan several times up here in Willow, and she and I competed in a race last year, the Don Bowers 200. So I'm very familiar with her and her mushing style. I'm sure you're going to talk about this, but she hails from Washington and spent some of her time up here in Alaska as well. What do you know about Jan Steves?
Well, Jan had hoped to be the first woman from Washington to run the Iditarod, but there was another one, I believe, last year or the year before. So she is now going to be the oldest woman from Washington to run the Iditarod. She's 55. And she is someone who's grew up in the outdoors, was always active in hiking and skiing and snowshoeing and things like that. She volunteered for Iditarod in 2008. She came up and was hosted by a guy named Ted English, who has run the Iditarod, and he let her get on the runners and drive some dogs, and she kind of became addicted, and since then has been spending most of her winters up in Willow, and then the rest of the year still living down in Washington. She had qualified for and was originally planning to run Iditarod last year, but then instead ran the Colonel Norman Vaughn 25 Serum Run, the Serum Run reenactment that goes from Nenana to Nome. And she said publicly that part of the reason she did that is she didn't quite feel that she was ready for a race like Iditarod, and wanted to do the Serum Run reenactment, which is on a slower scale, and get her used to the conditions out there before she took on Iditarod.
So you said that she's 55 years old, the oldest woman, as you mentioned, from Washington. But, you know, 55 isn't that old in terms of Iditarod. We have Dan Seavey out there. What is he, 76, 77? Then, of course, Jim Lanier at 71. This is still an old guy, old girl sport, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I certainly don't mean to say that 55 is old. She is... That's the way she described it, as the oldest woman from Washington. But 55, certainly for someone who's in good shape, and from what I've seen, she seems to be in very good shape. She seems to have a very good attitude towards the race and a plan that she's following. And, you know, as we've talked about, just because you are at the back of the pack does not mean that you are in any way failing or you are not a good musher. And, in fact, if you have a better idea of what your dogs can do and what you can do and still be able to take care of the dogs, being at the back of the pack is a great place to be.
Yeah, there's not as much, there's still some time constraints on you, but it's not as much pressure as being up there in the top tier, I guess, of the mushers. And, you know, tomorrow night on our show, we will be on at 6:30 p.m. on mushingradio.com. I want to talk about qualification for the Iditarod. I know there's been a lot of questions about that. You just can't sign up and run the Iditarod without doing any type of qualification. So I want to get into that. We haven't spoken about that at all yet in this coverage, so that's going to be a very interesting story as well. Of course, if anything important happens between now and then, remember, there's still a heck of a lot of mushing for these guys to do. Last year, the winner, John Baker, came in 8 days and some odd hours, but the last musher, the Red Lantern winter, who I want to talk about on Friday's show, came in well over 5 days after the winter. So there's still a heck of a lot of mushing to do out there. Alex, anything else you want to talk about tomorrow so we can wrap up today's show?
You know, there's going to be a lot of stuff happening between now and then. If you guys have anything that you're interested in, any topics, any questions, please post on our Facebook page or post to us on Twitter. I'm at Coltfoot Films and Robert is at Robert Forto. And we always love interacting with listeners, and we have quite a few people who are following us on Facebook and Twitter, and we absolutely appreciate it from all of you guys.
So to close our coverage today, make sure you head over to that Facebook page, Dogworks Radio, to search that in the search bar. Make sure you like our page because we're picking winners every day for a copy of Alex's Iditarod documentary, Mush the Movie. It's still in the... film festival circuit, but we're giving away advanced copies. We've already given away 7, 8, or 9 of them. I've sent out several winner announcements, and I haven't got anything back yet. So we're going to do that through our coverage, which is at least on Saturday. So, Alex, it's been a pleasure. We'll talk again tomorrow, 6:30 p.m. on MushingRadio.com. Talk to you soon, okay?
Okay, thanks, Robert.
No problem. So this is Robert Forto on behalf of Mushing Radio on KVRF 89.5 FM, Radio Free Palmer.org. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.